Chapter 19. Kelsey was glad to be at work. Michael was doing her head in, moping about the place, pining for his grandfather. She did her best to sympathize, but she didn't get it. She'd never had real parents, let alone grandparents. Grief seemed indulgent. If there was one thing living with Tony had led her to conclude, it was that life could either be what you made it or what you let it make of you. She had limited time for the latter attitude in others. She punched into the office and headed to the fertility ward to collect that day's assignments. Each day, the list was transmitted from the central ministry building at the square to the print room at the fertility center. They learned of each child assignment at the same time as its parents. The center was constantly pressurized, rushing to fulfill each day's unique commissions. Kelsey tore off the list and skimmed through the names. She always wondered how many families received their letters with joy rather than despair. As she left the print room, Kelsey slowed. There was shouting from the management office. She pressed her ear to the wall.
"And I told you, we need more people supervising the extractions," yelled Professor Hesley.
An unknown male voice burbled a response which Kelsey's boss rebutted.
"How do you expect me to run this facility when you won't properly equip us? My team reported the fault multiple times, and you stonewalled us. Your negligence has caused this nightmare."
Kelsey sprang back as the door burst open. A smartly dressed man stormed off, clutching a ministry briefcase. Kelsey peered into the office, where her boss was leaning over the desk with her head hung low in despair.
"Is everything okay, Professor? Anything I can do?"
"Unless you can go back in time and resynthesize last night's batch."
"No,"
she groaned.
"What's wrong with it?"
Hesley laughed bitterly, beckoning Kelsey in.
"Close the door. Is that today's list of parents? Poor devils. They're in for a rough time," said Hesley.
On the desk was a report detailing cerebrium levels in the synth tank. Kelsey's heart sank as she saw the quantities.
"These children will need serious support."
"Is the toxicity above the Huer threshold?"
asked Kelsey, rifling through the report. Hesley's eyebrows rose, impressed.
"No, it's just shy, which is perhaps worse. They're not severe enough to merit termination, yet the entire family's lives will be changed forever. Sometimes I despair of our system."
Kelsey gazed across the factory floor. The ministry official was touring the floor, consulting workers and arguing over equipment.
"We should tell the families.
They can't know this was our fault. It would cause untold damage to the trust people place in our institution," said Hesley.
"Blame aside, they deserve to know what they're facing.
Delivering such news is rough. Some parents will be distraught, others angry.
And it's our job to help them."
Clutching the list of names to her chest, Kelsey made for the lobby, ready to meet the first family. She lay out the pamphlets with a deep breath, hoping family number 5 would be more understanding.
"I know what this is,"
said the mother, shaking her head in disbelief. Tears welled in her eyes. The husband looked nonplussed as he examined the brochure. "Supporting your child through learning and developmental difficulties."
"What's this got to do with us?" asked the father.
"There were some complications during your child's gestation period. They're likely to require support in reaching normal developmental milestones. As they progress, we'll get more of a sense of their personal cognitive and physical potential, and the ministry will try to provide equipment and guidance accordingly," said Kelsey.
"Our kid's a freak?" said the father.
"Absolutely not," said Kelsey, aghast. "They might experience the world differently to their peers, but this pamphlet shows that with the right support and guidance, they can grow up to enjoy lives as fulfilling and meaningful as anyone else."
"A pamphlet? That's it? That's our support?"
cried the mother.
"We'll be referring you to a pediatrician for biannual checkups, but the day-to-day care will be your responsibility," said Kelsey.
"This isn't fair. We didn't ask for this, and we don't deserve it. You can't just expect us to go along with it," said the mother.
"I'm so sorry. I appreciate this is difficult news."
"Do you? Have you ever been told you've got a disabled kid coming?" snapped the father.
"We're leaving,"
sobbed the woman.
"Please, madam, sir, you can't leave. Your child is waiting on you."
The couple stormed out of the counseling room. Kelsey hastened after them, pamphlets in hand.
"How the hell do we get out of this place?"
cried the woman.
Panicking, the couple charged further into the maze of corridors. "You can't go back there, it's restricted! Security!" cried Kelsey, breaking into a run. Two automatons sped past her, seizing the couple as they reached for the antenatal unit.
"Get the hell off of us!" cried the man, struggling.
The ward door swung open. An automaton wheeled a trolley out, accompanied by a matron. On the front of the trolley, a name was printed in large ministry typeface. Edmund Aylesbury.
"That's my son," gasped the woman.
The trolley stopped abruptly, and the automatons released the two parents. Quivering, they peered into the crib. A tiny infant lay swaddled in a hospital blanket. Protruding from the bottom were a pair of prosthetic metal legs. The child's eyelids were sunken, caving into the sockets where its eyes should have grown.
"Is it?" stammered the father.
"Your child is blind. I'm sorry. There is an excellent school for blind children in the city, though. Perhaps when you're ready, we could arrange a visit for you."
"Do the kids there have no legs, too?"
choked the mother. The matron hesitated, looking to Kelsey for support.
They accommodate a wide variety of needs, ensuring every child feels included," said Kelsey.
The father lowered his hands into the crib and picked up the tiny infant. Its legs clinked as he lifted, and the baby gurgled anxiously. The man whispered soothing words as the child whimpered, bringing it close to his chest. He moved the blanket away from its face and stroked its cheeks. The child's arm wriggled free of its swaddling. As the father reached to tuck it back in, a tiny hand wrapped around his forefinger. The child gurgled and settled down into a sleep. The man looked to his wife tearfully.
"This is our son," he said softly.
The woman shook her head, regarding the child with dread. Her face crumpled as she welled up with tears.
I can't do it. I'm sorry. So sorry."
She pushed past the trolley and disappeared down the corridor. An automaton followed to ensure she found the exit. The other returned to duty elsewhere. With the child in its father's arms, the center's duty of care was complete.
"She'll come around. She just needs time,"
croaked the father. Looking down affectionately at his child, he rocked it gently in his arms.
"Do you still have that pamphlet?"
Kelsey knocked on her boss's office door.
"Enter."
The woman was poring over graphs and technical reports from the fertility factory floor. Through the glass wall behind her, technicians had isolated half of the tanks and were undertaking a deep clean.
"I don't get it," said Kelsey. "Get what? Why are we giving children to parents that don't want them? Some of them aren't capable of being caregivers. Earlier, I had to release a baby to a couple who were high," fumed Kelsey.
"Then you should report them and let social services investigate," said Hesley, continuing her paperwork.
"They don't always do that so well," snapped Kelsey.
"Is there a problem here, Kelsey?"
said her boss, removing her glasses.
"What we're doing is wrong. If people aren't capable of raising their kids or don't even want them, why are we delivering them? There are people out there longing for children of their own. Meanwhile, other lives are being ruined by unwanted arrivals. I don't get it."
Hesley leaned back in her chair.
"Look around," she said, gesturing to the factory floor. "What do you see?"
"The production line," shrugged Kelsey.
"That line has operated continuously for 300 years. It goes back to the first days of the city. It's been upgraded and modernized along the way, but the core alchemy hasn't faltered."
"And?"
"And it's our job to keep it running. It is not our job to decide who gets to have children. We bring babies into the world. We unite them with their parents. And from there on out, it's the parents' choices that matter."
"But don't you see? We're part of the problem. We're setting some children on a path they may never recover from. Some parents are disasters waiting to happen," urged Kelsey.
"The ministry sets the start line. The parents choose the path. The child walks it to adulthood. We make children, not decisions. If you do not like working here, we have plenty of people clamoring for your position. But it would be a shame to throw away all that hard work at night school."
"I want to be part of the solution, not the problem," said Kelsey sourly.
"You already are. Preparing parents to receive their child is a vital part of what we do.
It shapes their mindset at a critical time, and you do it well.
A segment of pipe gushed crimson sludge onto the factory floor behind them, as workers lowered it on a winch. They scrambled to shut off the stopcock and clear everyone away from the corrosive substance.
I don't want parents to face those conversations ever again. I want to fix the alchemy.
Finish your studies, and maybe you'll be capable.
Surely there's someone we can talk to at the ministry to stop children being born to unsuitable parents.
Define suitable, scoffed Hesley.
I don't know. Stable income, educated, loving.
And how do you measure those things?
Aptitude tests, tax data, desire.
And get an ever-shrinking feedback loop of family types? What about those who would make wonderful parents but lack money on paper? Or those who grow into the role? Or those who are smart and wealthy enough to game the system, then neglect their children? By restricting access, you're making children a commodity. Such a system creates problems of its own.
So how's it run now? Random chance? A lottery behind closed doors at the ministry? Protested Kelsey.
As with much of the ministry, that's not for us to know. Was there anything else?
Kelsey was about to argue further, but held her tongue, reading Hesley's glare.
No, Professor. I'm on personal leave this afternoon. Family funeral.
I'm sorry for your loss. See you tomorrow, said Hesley, returning to her paperwork.
The neighborhood was certainly well-to-do. The lawns were vibrant green, the fences painted, and the cars had all their hubcaps. Kelsey tucked in her shirt, checked her hair in the window, and knocked. The door swung open. The two women stared at each other, taken aback.
Kelsey? I didn't realize we had an appointment today. Sorry, it's not a good time. I'm taking some personal leave, said Val.
At the same time, Kelsey offered her own immediate apologies.
Gosh, I'm so sorry to bother you, Mrs. Hadley. I must have got the wrong address. I was looking for my boyfriend's house.
Michael appeared in the hallway and waved glumly.
Ah, there you are. Thanks for coming, babe. You've not missed much. Granddad's still dead. No one else is here yet.
Michael paused, registering the awkward silence between the two women.
Wait, have you two not met yet? Oh, crap. Mom, Kelsey, Kelsey, Mom.
Actually, Michael, we know each other quite well,
said his mother dazedly.
You do?
How? Kelsey's heart leaped into her mouth as she braced herself for a reputational mauling. Michael's mother hadn't met her at her best. Indeed, her best had been in the weeks after Val's interventions.
She's one of my most impressive clients. I've been humbly mentoring her ever since, but she really doesn't need me at all. She's got it all figured out now, apart from her choice in boys. I hope you like waiting, Kelsey, because this one is always late.
Val stepped away with a smile, leaving them to it. Kelsey blushed in amazement.
She likes you, muttered Michael, like he was commenting on the weather. She's a maybe on you, said Kelsey, elbowing him playfully.
2 hours later, the house was brimming with guests. Kelsey circulated with tea and coffee, providing liquid comfort to mourners from across generations. Michael was trapped in conversation with the boatload of visitors from out of town. He pretended to laugh at their anecdotes, but Kelsey could see through the facade. Pulling him aside, she swept him up in a bear hug.
You're doing great, she whispered.
She planted a kiss on his cheek, then hurried to the kitchen where Val was calling for her help with a sandwich delivery. The guests assembled in the back garden, forming a horseshoe. Val clinked her glass and stepped onto a kitchen chair, using it as a makeshift podium.
Thank you all for being here today, to celebrate the life and passing of my father, Amal. He was a wonderful man, a loving grandfather, and a constant source of joy in our lives.
She welled up, taking a moment to regain her composure, among a ripple of well-meaning applause. A lump formed in Kelsey's throat as she stared around Michael's circle of friends and family. She slipped away to the bathroom as tears formed in her eyes. Anger, frustration, hurt, all tumbled out as she mourned the childhood she'd never had, the relationship she'd been denied, the love she'd lost. She stood over the sink and stifled her sobs. A knock at the bathroom door interrupted her tears.
Just a minute, she called, drying her face. Kelsey?
She opened the door to find Michael standing there. He looked numb.
Were you crying?
It's nothing, just an emotional day. Are you okay? She said. I need the bathroom. They do-si-do'd past each other. Kelsey stole a precious second to compose herself in the corridor, then put on her best hospitality smile as an elderly visitor rounded the corner looking for her coat. The wake lasted several more hours before people cleared off. Kelsey stacked up mugs and plates as Michael and his family waved off the last of the guests in the pink dusk light. The phone rattled in its hook. Sophia, the only one with energy left, called Shotgun and answered. She held the piece to her ear and frowned.
Listen,
she said, holding it out for the others to hear. It was a pre-recorded message playing on a loop.
This is a ministry reminder. You have not checked your mail for today.
Michael's face fell. He grabbed the keys and dashed to the front lawn. Wrenching the mailbox open, he grabbed the pile of letters inside. He tossed the restaurant flyers and local news aside and fixed his disbelieving eyes on the last item in his hands. A single white envelope with his name printed on the front in ministry writing. He slumped to the floor and sat cross-legged on the path, staring at the letter in his hands. Kelsey watched with a dawning sense of horror.
"What is it?"
asked Sophia, skipping out. She saw the white letter and squealed with delight.
"We're getting a baby? Mom, come see! We're getting a baby!" she cried.
Val hastened to the door and stared at her son in astonishment. She looked from him to Kelsey, and her lips tightened.
"I think the three of us should talk," she said curtly.
"Actually, I'm good. I've got to get to school. I can still catch the rest of tonight's class if I run. Thanks for having me over," said Kelsey, grabbing her things. Michael stared in bewilderment as she rushed past him, disappearing down the street. His eyes returned to the unmistakable letter before him. Michael Hadley. There was no mistaking the Ministry of Fertility emblem beside it. He'd seen it enough times on Kelsey's uniform. Besides, white envelopes were only ever used for this purpose. There was no escaping it. In 24 hours' time, he would be a father.